Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Zeros TV and another episode of The Chopping Block. I'm joined today by Kier Kalan of Scorpion Capital. Kier, thank you so much for coming back on.
Great to see you again, Max. Thanks for having me.
All right. Who's up on The Chopping Block today?
It's a company called Ginkgo Bioworks. They just went public via a SPAC transaction. They do what's called synthetic biology.
All right. I've heard that word before in our last episode of The Chopping Block. Why don't we start out with a good question? What do they claim to do?
You know, like a lot of synthetic biology companies, it's a little bit unclear. The way that I describe Ginkgo is it is a series of taglines masquerading as a company. And the core tagline that they've raised billions around is that we make it as easy to program cells as you can with a computer. You know, synthetic biology is a lot of jargon around it. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about Berkeley Lights, which we put a report out on. And Berkeley Lights, one of the segments that they play in is synthetic biology. And, you know, Berkeley Lights, like a lot of other synthetic biology companies that come and go, they tend to use a lot of fancy words to cloak the fact that what they're doing, in the case of Ginkgo Bioworks specifically, is just standard genetic engineering, typically of yeast cells. So the core idea of synthetic biology is you take an organism and you modify the organism, right? So standard genetic engineering. And the platform of choice in the industry is yeast, and sometimes people use E. coli. And you simply tweak the yeast, and it might produce some kind of a flavor, some kind of a compound, some kind of a scent that might go into a perfume, for example. So people use these host organisms to come up with ingredients to go into food products, cosmetic products. And there's nothing new here. You know, people have been doing this for more than 50 years. Some of the techniques have gotten a little bit, evolved. But at the end of the day, what Ginkgo does is the same thing that other people do when they do strain engineering, and they're essentially a commodity CRO, a contract research organization. Now, you know, they would turn over, you know, in their graves if somebody described them as just another commodity CRO, but that's the term that their own customers use to describe them.
All right. Well, that's what they do, but what about why it's on your radar as a potential short candidate? What did you uncover? And specifically, is it the technology that you're talking about and how not revolutionary they are? Or is there more to this?
So there are two key parts to our short case. The first is what we believe to be an epic scam. We think they have a hocus pocus business model that revolves around investing money into related parties. These are companies that they've created. They're generally co-located inside their offices. They exercise either control or a tremendous amount of influence over these companies. So it's basically a round-tripping model. Money goes into these companies, and they sign these R&D services agreements with Ginkgo, and the money kind of magically flows back out. So it's sort of, you know, kind of going from the left hand to the right hand. So the bulk of the report is really talking about that first part of the model and the fact that it is essentially a giant shell game. The second part of the short thesis, which is the last 50 pages of the report, which is critical, but I think somewhat less relevant, just given the overwhelming amount of evidence on, you know, just the business model and how this thing is just completely vaporous, is that there's really not much that's special, right? They talk about how we program cells. They're just a commodity CRO. We talked to a lot of former employees. We talked to current customers that they have. And these are people that they're funding, right? Related parties that are based in their offices. And they speak quite negatively about what Ginkgo calls the foundry, which is basically just a lab that is comprised of equipment from the same suppliers that supply every other commodity strain engineering CRO. So the short case is actually both of those. It's the business model being essentially a hoax. And second, it's that the technology, the IP, the lack of customer success, we think 90-100% of the collaborations typically tend to fail. We had really strong color on that for former employees. So it's really both. You know, it's a business model. It's also the fundamentals around, you know, the product, customers, and so forth.
All right. Well, let's start with the business model and get in there. And I just want to encourage everybody to go read the report. I've gotten a chance to see at least what I would call a rough draft of this report. And it's extensive. It's expansive. And we just won't be able to touch on everything in this report. So we're going to go into some of the more important details. But please, everybody, if you're interested in really diving into this, go read the report. So let's talk about that business model. Who's funding them? You talk about Ginkgo investing in them, but there's a couple of other big parties which are part of why there is so much hype around this stock. They have some prominent investors.
Yeah, Ginkgo is a number of hedge funds, or in the case of Viking Global, affiliates of Viking Global that I guess technically maybe private equity firms. I'm not exactly sure what the legal structure is, but Viking Global is the top holder. It's a very large firm. Then you have Cascade Investments, which is family office of Bill Gates. You have General Atlantic, which is a private equity firm. And then you have a bunch of other hedge funds, Anchorage, Senator, folks that we think, essentially just tagged along with the top couple of holders. So yeah, it's got an A-list series of holders. And we think the role that these holders have played is pretty interesting, because the core of Ginkgo's business model is that they create these ventures, and they have different names for them. They call them platform ventures, which are brand new entities that they just create, right? Like, they'll actually incorporate it, they'll put it in their offices, they'll like transfer some Ginkgo people over to it. It's unclear to us who they're paid by, whether they're paid by the entity, whether they're still paid by Ginkgo. So they create these companies, they call this platform ventures, and they have a second category of these related parties that they call structured partnerships, which are entities that are already existing. The kind of two main ones, a company called Synlogic, which is a microcap drug development company. Then the one called Genomatica, which is a privately held company that focuses on chemical space, synthetic biology for chemicals applications. So, we go through all these related parties, the different flavors of them. But I think instead of kind of getting the subtleties of how they define each kind of related party, I think the most important thing for investors to understand here is the model, right? What is the model? In a typical old-fashioned business, right, you have customers, they're third parties, right? It's not your uncle, right? It's not your sister. It's not your cousin, right? It's a customer with whom you have an arm's length relationship. You deliver a product or a service, and they give you cash, right? And you book that cash as revenue. It's kind of how people typically think of business works. And Ginkgo, which we think is actually, it's an elaborate cover-up for their inability to get third-party customers, concocted this model where they'll say, oh, we'll start these entities, we'll incubate them. But, it's really a standard, arm's length vendor-customer relationship where, sure, we put money into them. And yes, they're turning around and they're giving us that money back by, quote, purchasing R&D services from us. So that's a business model, right? So it's a business model that's really architected around spinning off and creating your own customers. And these investors that Ginkgo has show up repeatedly in these related party entities as investors.
One thing that I think is interesting is if you go in the actual filings, there is a high percentage of their revenue that they say comes from related parties. But one of the things you got into was, not only is that already a ridiculously high number, but there is also a large amount of revenue that you think actually is attributed to related parties that they're not reporting. And then on top of that, that revenue isn't what most of us would define as revenue. So why don't we break down those two issues as well?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think you're kind of getting to the heart of a couple of very important issues. So their filings, if I recall correctly, say that in 2020, 72% of their revenue was from related parties. Now, that is already, it's such an alarming level, it makes you question what's going on with the business model. But we think that they actually have underreported that number, and we think it's close to 100%. And there's a smoking gun, which we feel establishes that. And we think the reason why this occurred, and we think that it did based on our research and the evidence that we share, we heard that there was a lot of fear inside the company that the business model would not pass regulatory scrutiny and that it might prevent an IPO because it's just such a farce that this is where all your revenue is coming from. So we think that they squirreled some of that related party revenue into non-related party revenue, because then at least they can say, oh, it's not 100%, it's 72%. So we have, about a third, maybe less than a third, that's coming from third parties, and it's getting bigger over time, right? Because I think in Q1, that number may have dropped like, kind of 50-something%. So I think they may be trying to sort of show a trend that, yeah, it's a lot of related parties, but, it's not 100% related parties. And we think it's actually getting better. Point number two is that not only is the reported percentage of related parties, astronomical at 72%, we think it's actually close to 100%. And there's evidence that we can talk about that can establish why that's the case. But I think the third thing here that, takes the scam into, just like max extreme territory, is that we think at least half of that revenue is non-cash. Like, I didn't even know there's a thing is non-cash revenue. Like, I thought revenue is like, you know, cash. You may not get it today. It finds it's a receivable, but at some point you're going to end up getting cash for it. So, I mean, this thing is so insane where in some of these related parties that they or their investors are putting money into, what they do is they sign an R&D agreement and they get what are essentially kind of R&D credits back. And the accounting alchemy here is that Ginkgo is taking equity investment in these entities and it is magically transforming that into revenue, even though no cash has changed hands. We talked to some of these related party customers, one in particular, which comprises a substantial percentage of their revenue, where they don't disclose, you know, the amount that's not cash. They told us that they have never paid Ginkgo cash for R&D services. So if you add up that example and other examples where we think we found smoking guns, you know, we get to around 50% of their reported R&D revenue being non-cash. You know, it's one thing to kind of be a scam artist, right? And to kind of be doing round tripping. It's another to kind of put cash into entities and not even get the cash back. Like then you're just an incompetent scam artist. So it wouldn't surprise us if, you know, in about half the cases, they actually are successful in recycling cash. And we think where they're able to do that are actually these platform ventures, which are the de novo ventures that they create. They're typically based inside Boston, so they have more control over those. Whereas these companies like Genomatica, you know, which are not co-located with them, you know, which are quasi-independent, irrespective of, you know, Viking, you know, Ginkgo's largest holder, also being Genomatica's largest holder. We think in those cases, you know, Ginkgo has less control, even though they still have influence. And therefore, they're not able to round trip cash back because they don't have that leverage. So they basically round trip it back as accounting non-cash revenue instead.
Why don't we run through a few of these examples of what these related parties actually look like, what their structure is, and what their business model is?
So these related parties are Ginkgo's customers, right? So this is how they record revenue. You know, 72% on a recorded basis, we think it's actually close to 100%. So it's really weird that these are, just at the face of it, right, that these customers, in quotes, share certain features, right? Number one, Ginkgo generally created them. Number two, they're based inside their offices. Number three, they're funded by Ginkgo or Ginkgo's largest investors. You know, next, they tend to have a very small number of employees, you know, certainly not commensurate with the kinds of revenue that Ginkgo is often booking from these entities. In addition, you know, the websites tend to be pretty vaporous in a lot of cases. In one example, you know, we found evidence of what we believe to be Ginkgo actually, you know, hosting the site or part of the site themselves. So there are a lot of indicia here that suggests that these aren't really customers. They're basically fronts that Ginkgo controls. And so when there's an investment into these entities, it's not as though that customer is kind of making an independent decision to return money back to Ginkgo as a customer. It's basically Ginkgo sending money, you know, through a conduit back to itself.
Some of these I noticed aren't companies that were around for a long time before they even made deals with Ginkgo. They seem to be almost incorporated within days or weeks of these fundraisings and transactions where the money is coming back.
Yeah, the red flags around these entities are voluminous. And, you know, look, we think this is a related party scam. And the best analogy that we can come up with is the China hustle. About a decade ago, you had all these Chinese companies that listed in the U.S. and the signature feature of a lot of these frauds was related parties, right? They would have fake revenue because they were these entities that were essentially subsidiaries. So there was all the circular round tripping kind of stuff that was going on. And, you know, when people investigated those entities, right, different short sellers, you know, we've shorted a lot of those over the years. It's amazing when you look at who's standing behind that entity, you know, it's actually the company that's booking revenue from them. So a lot of these related parties, I'll just be specific. There's one called Kalo Ingredients, which is a company that Ginkgo created. I think they reported about a $12 million deferred revenue balance from them as of Q1 2021. You know, we pulled up Kalo's corporate registry filing in Massachusetts, which indicated that the entity was formed on March 15th, 2021. Yet by end of Q1, 2 weeks later, March 31st, Ginkgo had magically recorded about $12 million of revenue from it. How does that happen? Right? Additional red flags. The address that's listed for this entity is Ginkgo's headquarters, right? Same building. And I think it was actually even the same floor, if I'm not mistaken. And then that form has, it asks you to list who the managers are of the entity. Like, you typically have to list who the board is, who the managers are. So three managers that are listed. It's a CEO of Ginkgo. It's his head of ventures. And it's an entrepreneur residence that, you know, our interviews indicated is a pal of the CEO. So how is this anything but a sham transaction? Right? Like, how is that $12 million in revenue anything but fake? Right? I mean, it's just self-evident as fraud.
Okay. And what about some of the other third parties? Not all of them are as egregious, where the CEO of Ginkgo is on the registry, but the ties seem to be there in almost every case.
Yeah, although you'd be surprised at the number of ones where the founders of Ginkgo are actually listed in some of those positions. But there are so many of these entities that we found that are just sketchy on the face of it. And it's one thing that I think is worrisome is that we think they've proliferated a lot of these new related parties recently. And they've announced a lot of them, kind of in the month or two right around their SPAC transaction, because now they need to show growth over the next couple quarters. If your model is based on round tripping, the way that you have to show growth is by creating more related parties that funnel money back to you. So there's been this flurry of announcements, and these announcements don't say that these are related parties, right? I mean, that is a very important material fact that you should be telling people, right? So these press releases are announcing that this entity, this partnership, includes an R&D services agreement with Ginkgo. It doesn't tell you that Ginkgo or its investors are funding the entity. So we talked about Kalo. One of those examples is a company called Cambion Biomaterials. So we had heard from a former employee that there was some shadiness going on around, these undisclosed related parties. And we examined them and we found several, but Cambion was one. This is a company that lists three employees on LinkedIn. Only one of them appears to be full-time. The company's office is a co-working space in Berkeley, California. It's got a very simple brochure type website that I think is only a page. And we found a smoking gun that indicates that there was a fairly large financing the same day, September 2nd, that Ginkgo put out a press release announcing a partnership with Cambion, but the press release didn't say that there was investment in it. We found an SEC filing that this startup did called a Form D that stated there was, I think it was about a $28 million round. It stated that they had closed on $8 million of it. We spoke to an individual who was close to Cambion, and that individual said that the round was actually $11 million, not $8 million. And that Ginkgo had put in $5 million of it. A shocking fact, utterly missing from the press release. How do you put that much money into a company that is that small unless your intention is that it's round trip back to you, right? That's our interpretation of what took place here. And we can kind of go through one example after another, like, Kalo, like Cambion Biomaterials, these companies that have almost no employees. And Kalo, by the way, lists zero employees on LinkedIn. It's not just it's in their headquarters, right? The CEO of Ginkgo is on the board. It doesn't even appear to have any official employees. So by definition, how can it have any revenue?
So you talked about some people that you had spoken with and you opened the door talking about employees. I think that's a good road for us to go down now. I know you talked to former employees at Ginkgo and as well former employees and even some current employees at these related parties. I think they were extremely, revelatory for you. So let's get into what you learned from these interviews.
Yeah. So, our research process, a key part of it is talking to a lot of former employees typically. On this one, we think the scam is so self-evident that we didn't even really need to do that, because if you're just, thorough and you go through the filings and you do other forensic and accounting work, you can establish, you know, pretty clearly, you know, kind of what the rake is here. But we talked to a large number of former employees of Kinko. And we talked to, for the most part, current employees of these related party customers, as well as former employees of some of those. And, you know, those key related party customers, they disclose about, you know, five or six of them in their filings. We talk about them in the report. There's one called Join Bio, which is a JV with Bayer. There's one called Motif Foodworks, Genomatica, Alonia, Kale Ingredients. And we talked to, you know, current or former employees, I think, you know, pretty much all of them. And there are a lot of pretty shocking things that that we found. So number one, they corroborated our concerns around this round tripping model. They indicated there was a widespread awareness in the company that this could be problematic. You know, so much so that they thought it might actually end up preventing an IPO or cause some regulatory problems. Number two, we heard from several people that they had been terminated for pushing back. So in one of these cases, a person was at one of these related party entities. They described pressure from Ginkgo to basically play ball and recycle money back to Ginkgo. Now, you know, I want to state that, you know, these allegations that former employees have made, you know, these are very detailed, extensive conversations. You know, we think they were very credible, but, you know, we have not, you know, verified their accounts by talking to, you know, two other people that were in the room at the same, you know, the same period of time. But we found the allegations powerful. We found them convincing. So we talked to a couple of people like that. And they mentioned they were aware of other people that had been pushed out for similar reasons. And then we talked to a third person who wasn't pushed out for this reason, but who indicated a personal awareness of others who this individual felt had been. So, you know, we think this is a minefield. You know, for a situation as egregious as this one, we typically prefer to do at least 20 to 40 calls. We wanted to get this report out. We think it's important for investors to have this information. So we did a fair amount of calls, but not as many as a situation like this would typically warrant. And we were shocked at how damning the information was, even in the first small number of calls. I mean, within just a handful of calls, we had people alleging that they had been terminated, right? So if somebody will go out, you know, investigator, reporter, prosecutor, kind of whoever, you know, it is, who ends up taking an interest in the situation, we think this is just going to be like the mother of, but just the amount of whistleblowers, the amount of evidence, we just think there's a lot here for other people to unpack. So people indicated that there was concern on round tripping. Number two, they indicated that, you know, they alleged essentially retaliation for people to push back on it. Number three, they corroborated that these related party customers are very closely affiliated with Ginkgo and, you know, essentially talked about them as being, you know, fronts with this intermingling, you know, people right next to each other, you know, they were designed to have close association, you know, things that do not, you know, smell or sound like a typical third party, you know, vendor customer relationship. An additional very important point that these people, particularly these related party entities made, that I think is important to understand, is that they indicated that Ginkgo, in their view, was overcharging them for R&D services, right? So, I mean, just think about like all the crazy layers on this thing, right? It's related party. We think the related party revenues are understated. We think that related party revenue is not only understated, but it's actually non-cash, you know, and we think it's the customers that are actually basically fronts and not even third-party customers. And then with those related party customers that we think are essentially like captive entities or subsidiaries of Ginkgo, they're trying to take them for as much money as they can. And employees describe, you know, what we characterize as sort of a culture of overcharging. People gave us specific examples where they thought Ginkgo was charging them 50 to 250% of what the market rate was, these kinds of strain engineering services. So, I mean, it just seems like they're going all out, you know, all out to exploit every single kind of, you know, piece of this scheme that they can. I mean, it's like there's no mercy, like there's no shame. I mean, it's just like over the top.
So there was one statement in particular that I think stuck out to me in terms of how these related parties really felt about the relationship between Ginkgo. And it was the customer who said that they had only paid using these credits, but had they had to pay cash, that they never would have actually paid cash for those services. Can you talk to me? I think it's a good segue into, you know, where these services stood within the sort of spectrum of what was available on the market.
Yeah, and it brings up a very important point of which is, you know, kind of like the product and the intellectual property hype around this thing, right? So Ginkgo's invented this word called foundry, right? So it's all about their kind of magical foundry, which is really just, you know, commodity CRO work where they are doing, you know, standard strain engineering, typically with yeast and in some cases E. coli. But what's surprising is even though this is standard stuff that people have done for decades, Ginkgo doesn't appear to be able to do it very well. And we heard that from one customer after another. So the one you mentioned is one of their largest sources of related party revenue. It's a customer called Genomatica. And, you know, they actually said the same thing that the other related party said. They just said it, I think, you know, much more specifically and bluntly. And they said that we had to pay cash, you know, for the services. They basically said that, you know, we would not, that we don't trust them. They haven't proven themselves as a CRO. And, you know, we heard that from Join Bio. You know, they have to spend most of their R&D, we think, with Ginkgo today because it's, you know, a related party. We got the sense that that's not something that they want to do. There's another company called Motif Foodworks. We actually heard that the CEO of Motif and the CEO of Ginkgo are barely on speaking terms anymore. And somebody said that, you know, they're quite, I forget what the word was. They said spicy. So, yeah. So it was actually quite shocking that, you know, even customers that you are paying essentially to use your R&D service, you're saying it's not that good. There are a lot of these very fancy videos on Ginkgo's website. You know, they have this super slick website. I mean, I'm just curious how much money they spent on that website. So they call it the Foundry. Then they have this thing called the Codebase. And, you know, the Foundry sounds like, you know, kind of these elves running around in the North Pole coming up with brand new organisms that are going to change the world. And the bulk of it is capital equipment that they're spending ridiculous sums of money on. Basically, you know, a couple of vendors, we think. So one of them is a company called Sartorius, which sells these things called fermenters, which is like these bioreactors where you end up, you know, kind of growing these yeast strains. They're very expensive. And, you know, they bought tons and tons of those. You can actually see photos of those, I think, on their websites and these videos. The second are these automated liquid handling machines. So the way that yeast strain engineering works is that you tweak yeast in a lot of different ways, right? You run a lot of different permutations. You throw a lot of stuff at the wall. And then you see what comes out. You see what they excrete. And maybe you kind of get a compound that's interesting or, you know, maybe you don't. So it's a very repetitive, manual, laborious process, right? Where you may have to have, you know, hundreds of thousands of like these wells in a well plate where you do this. And, you know, kind of their big innovation, what they call robotics, is just, you know, automating that testing. And they use these automated liquid handling machines, basically pipette, which is a fancy word for dropping liquid into all of these wells. That's all they've done, right? All they've done is kind of automated the manual process, you know, for, you know, putting liquid samples into way more test tubes. It hasn't really worked very well because there don't really seem to be many third-party customers that are willing to, you know, pay for the results that come out of it. And therefore, it's no surprise, right, that one related party customer after another, you know, these are people that are intimately familiar with the Foundry because they're located in it. They're located right there, right, in Ginkgo's headquarters. They just described it as, you know, we don't understand the hype. You know, we don't get it. It's just a commodity CRO. They can't even deliver stuff unless we kind of, you know, micromanage it. It seems like they kind of take forever and stretch out stuff just so they can keep overcharging us. So at every level, you know, at the level of the business model, the accounting, but also sort of fundamental level, when you think about the value proposition, the product, intellectual property, I mean, this thing is like a total farce.
You brought up an interesting point that we haven't really gotten into, which is, even on this revenue, which may be non-cash, which may be related party revenue, they're not making any money either.
Correct. You know, our last report on Berkeley Lights a couple of weeks ago, we called the financials a dumpster fire. And, you know, maybe we should have reserved that term. I mean, Berkeley Lights financials are some of the worst that we've ever seen. You know, but those financials, you know, Ginkgo's financials, I mean, they make Berkeley Lights look like Berkshire Hathaway. I mean, it is, epic. I mean, it's like Hiroshima, what's going on with, you know, with Ginkgo's financials. And I think it's one of the things that I think it's a function of the related party model and the revenue being non-cash, right? I mean, the reason the cash burn here is so high is because the top line that you're showing is not really the top line. Like there's, we're like, isn't there any cash? Isn't there something coming in the door, right, to mitigate this burn?
So Keir, we touched on so many different points today, different angles about why you think that this is a great short. I think before I let you go, it would be really helpful if we could just summarize them all in sort of bullet form.
A few key points for people to bear in mind. Number one, the vast majority of the R&D services revenue, what they call foundry revenue, that they report is related party. I mean, it's an absurd 72% of the total. Where are the third-party customers, right? Why can't you get a customer that you have not funded and who's not sitting in your offices to pay you? Number two, we think that 72% is underreported, and it's actually close to 100%, right? So we think they have close to zero revenue from third-party customers, and we think they've underreported it because, you know, they want to try to make it seem like, yeah, three-quarters of our revenue is related party, but hey, you know, that quarter is going to end up becoming 50%, 100% at some point. But we think, you know, they have misclassified it. Number three, that related party revenue, we think is at least 50% non-cash. So is revenue even the appropriate word for it? Like I thought, you know, revenue typically meant that somebody's giving you cash. They might not give you cash today. They might give you, you know, a receivable, but it's going to convert to cash, right, within a couple of months or whatever. Like, I don't know. I mean, is non-cash revenue even a thing? Number four, the related parties that they classify as an arm's length vendor customer relationship or anything but, we think they're pretty much fronts. And, you know, we went through one related party after another, and it's amazing. I mean, some of these things are just shells. You know, some of them have no employees, yet, you know, Ginkgo's still booking revenue from them. You know, they list Ginkgo's CEO as being like the manager. The corporate filings for these entities state that they actually co-located inside Ginkgo's offices. So, you know, their websites in some cases appear to be hosted by, you know, by Ginkgo. So how are these not fronts? The next point is that we think they exploit the scam in yet another way, which is that they try to overcharge these related parties. So we got information from employees of these related parties that they're paying 50 to 250% in some cases, the market rate for Ginkgo services. So like the level of greed here is just insane. Like it's not enough that it's basically like your subsidiary you're booking revenue from, that subsidiary is kind of in your offices, not even giving you non-cash revenue. Then it looks to us like they've got to pad the revenue because, I mean, this thing is so wild. It's out of control. Never seen anything like this. And the closest analogy is really the China hustle, right? The China hustle refers to this series of Chinese companies that listed in the U.S. starting about a decade ago that were, for the most part, outright frauds, typically of the related party genre. And it's rare to see a related party situation at Ginkgo's market cap in the U.S. market. It just doesn't happen. I mean, you have to go to Wild West offshore jurisdictions to see this kind of stuff. You know, at like 20 billion plus valuation, right? At a price to sales multiple of something, you know, that's approaching 200, we just don't think the market has any real awareness of what a house of cards and what a China hustle type scam Ginkgo is.
All right, Keir, well, you make a strong case. Thank you so much for coming back on the chopping block. Looking forward to doing it again soon.
Thanks a lot, Max. Appreciate it.